Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the VersaBank 2020 first quarter results conference call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. David Taylor. Please go ahead, Mr. Taylor.
Well, thank you, Paul, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to VersaBank's 2020 first quarter financial results. We're coming to you from the winter wonderland of London, Ontario. I have with me today Shawn Clarke, who's our CFO, and Ali Lalani, who's our treasurer, who are standing by if you have any detailed questions you'd like to ask. Before we begin, please note that the conference call slides, quarterly results, news releases, and supplemental financial information are available on our investor relations page of our website, versabank.com, and they're also available on SEDAR. I would like to remind you, our listeners, that the statements about future events made on this call are forward-looking in nature and are based on certain assumptions and analysis made by management. Actual results could differ materially from our expectations due to various material risks and uncertainties associated with VersaBank's businesses. Please refer to our forward-looking statement advisory, which is on slide two. Moving over to the presentation, I'm on slide three. Hopefully, you've looked at slide two, where I talk about the agenda. First, what I thought I would do for those of you that are new to the VersaBank, I would review our model and then get into the Q1 results and then move on to what we have in mind for the future. Moving to slide four, this slide shows graphically the technology model that we have created. Not to go over it in detail, but just to highlight the spots, we use existing distribution channels to distribute our banking products. We've created and maintained state-of-the-art custom banking software that we hope provides us with financial independence from the other banks and other participants in the industry. We have what we think is a modest risk appetite. Looking at the triangle on the far right, you'll note that we have 92 employees. Just to give you an example of the type of leverage that we use in our company and how our model is set up. Of the 92 employees, about nine of those would have direct interface with our partners. We have nine relationship people on staff, and the rest are basically support staff. The largest department in that support staff area would be our IT staff. We have finance and accounting and other administrative functions. Gives rise to 30 origination partners that the relationship managers look after, 26,000 depositors, 156,000 borrowers. This quarter, we closed with about 1.85 billion in assets. Turning to slide five, just graphically shows you how our deposits are raised. They're raised through a partnership with about 120 or so other corporate entities that we call ourselves a B2B business. We've got some of the logos on the slide that would show the deposit brokers that send us deposits each day. We've also got some of the logos of the larger accounting firms who we receive deposits from their insolvency practices. Clicking to slide six. There she goes. This is the sort of the opposite side of our business. This is where we distribute our lending assets, and we have about 30 partners that we work with on that front, and that's all across Canada, too. For the most part, those partnerships are composed of point-of-sale finance companies. What we're able to do is indirectly finance everything from hot water heaters to hot tubs and motorcycles all throughout Canada, where the financing occurs at point of sale. We also have partners that provide us with commercial mortgages. Now flicking to slide seven. Slide seven is sort of a graphic demonstration of our model. And I used last year's figures to illustrate how the bank's model works. Last year, we would have collected about $88 million in interest income, and we would have paid about $34 million of that out on interest expense, leaving us with $54 million, or about a 3% return on our assets. 1.4% of that went to cover our fixed costs, so that'd be $26 million or so, and the rest was left over, we call core cash earnings, of about $28 million. Just clicking through the presentation here. Slide 8 just gives you a visual of the type of real estate projects we often finance, mostly high-rise multifamily, but we do some commercial and we do some land development. The next slide, slide 9, visual on some of the items that I mentioned that we finance through our point-of-sale finance people. Those who are thinking about motorcycles, as I was this weekend, can forget it. It looks like another month before the motorbike comes out. The next slide is slide 10, and that shows that we have been reducing our reliance on personal deposits. In the personal deposit market, as I think most of you know, they're on the phone, is heated up and is quite a competitive market, and some FIs are paying extraordinary high interest rates on their, particularly on their daily interest savings accounts, some cases 1% higher than we're paying. So we created another channel for deposits to take our reliance off that personal market that does heat up from time to time. The other market we created is we call commercial funding, and slide 11 illustrates the progress we've made in raising deposits from this channel. This channel is the channel where we add some value to our depositor with our software. We give our depositors a software solution that hopefully makes their lives easier, makes it easier to deal with our bank. So they're not the decision factor isn't just interest rates, it's something else, it's convenience. We've done fairly well on this front, and it's served to keep our cost of funds at a competitive level. Next slide is slide 12. This just gives you a sort of a pie chart, which shows the mix of our assets, our lending assets, that is. So we hit the $1.1 billion mark, which is quite a number for us. It's quite an achievement for us to crack through the billion in our e-commerce business. This quarter, we went over to 1.1, which now composes 63% of our lending assets. And as shown in the previous slides, these loans and lease receivables that we obtained from the point-of-sale finance partners are scattered all throughout Canada. Roughly in proportion to the population of Canada. With commercial banking for the most part are those high-rise multifamily projects, and that now represents 37% of our lending assets and is 605. That portfolio we've been letting run down, and that it was also composed of what we call non-core assets that were priced quite some time ago and had fairly thin spreads, very thin margins, so we've been letting them run off and replacing them with higher margined, mainly construction loans and term loans. Looking at slide 13, that just shows you a nice chart of the increase in the portfolio size of the e-commerce portfolio. I'd love to see that. I'm looking for a lot more growth in that area. That's a business that we think is ideally suited to our bank. We're of course adept at providing software solutions, and we think the way the world is unfolding, convenience in banking is a deciding factor over interest rates, or well, to a certain degree over interest rates. I think we think consumers and businesses will opt for the convenient bank over the cheap bank within a certain limits on interest rates, of course. This slide, slide 14, as you're starting to see what all this wonderful digital banking technology applied to a banking industry has been able to do. These are going to be very good numbers. You notice that our net interest margin has been hovering about 3%, slight 4 basis point dip this quarter, and next quarter it could be up 4, down 4. It moves around depending on how the portfolio mix changes slightly, but those are big net interest margin figures in comparison to what our colleagues in the banking industry are able to earn. And the net interest income, of course, was $14 million. If you annualize that, it's a little more than we would have achieved in 2019. We're hoping for bigger and better things than that, of course, with all the various projects that I'm about to talk to you on the future side. But looking good. This slide I'll go over kind of quickly, but when I say we have a modest risk appetite, you might say, hey, what does that mean? Well, what it means is that our portfolio generates provisions for losses that would be called negligible, as opposed to the industry, which is running around last year around 35 basis points. This year, we're just starting to see the results of the other banks. Some are up, some are down. But as you can see, there's no comparison to the quality of our portfolio versus the other banks. And how does this all sort of work for us? Well, it means our economies of scale are kicking in and the cost earned a dollar of revenue is decreasing. The next slide, 17, a nice slide. I call it a technology advantage. It just so shows that when you're able to leverage your software and put up more and more business without increasing your fixed costs, it goes straight to the bottom line as core cash earnings. Now we're getting into the slides that are where the rubber meets the road. Over the past 5 years, we've turned a 40% compounded average growth rate of core cash earnings. We're still on track to do that again. Well, maybe not quite 40 this upcoming year, but quite a nice growth trajectory. Turning to slide 19, and I apologize for this one. It's a little busy, and next quarters we'll put it to half year mark, so it's not so much of charts, but you get the picture. Our earnings per share has gone up by about 5 times in the last 5 years, from 7 cents up to around about 35 cents in the last few quarters. That's fantastic. And the reason I talk about core cash earnings per share, it kind of levels the playing field. Different FIs report in different ways. Some use adjusted earnings, some use net income. What we like to do is say, go right to the bottom line. This is how much cash the bank retained after its provision for cash taxes. And, of course, we have very little in terms of provision for cash taxes, and that we have tax losses, tax loss carry forwards that we're using up. So a wonderful trend that we here at VersaBank are proud of, but we are a little bit on the greedy banker side and are looking for much more. Alrighty, looking at slide 20, that just illustrates that with respect to leverageable capital, we have loads and loads of capacity. We're almost running, 3 times what most of the industry is. That means to you as investors or potential investors that certain markets we could put on perhaps $2 billion worth of assets without diluting our shareholders, i.e. issuing more shares. That's a tremendous amount of capacity that we're planning to use with some of the new projects that I'm about to talk about. Alrighty, so this is the fun stuff. We're into what we've been working on, and some of these, of course, I mentioned in the quarterly that hopefully you've had a chance to read. So I'll talk about the ones that aren't the one that's not highlighted, because I think that's probably the one we should end on. So first, I talked about raising U.S. dollar deposits. Well, this is a breakthrough in the small FI industry, and the CDIC has announced that it will ensure U.S. dollar deposits as of April 30th this year. So up until April 30th, I believe, U.S. dollar deposits have really been the exclusive area for the large banks, in that Canadians saving up their U.S. dollars for perhaps a trip to Florida that I might be looking out the window today, have likely been storing those U.S. dollar deposits with the large Canadian banks, in that we small banks would not have had CDIC deposit insurance on them. But as of April 30th, good Canadians can store their U.S. dollars with us or with any of the other small FIs that systems and software are able to accept U.S. dollars. And we're looking forward to that because it's a brand new channel for us to take on U.S. dollars. We have the systems set up and ready to receive the U.S. dollars. As you know, our deposits flow through our partners. So hopefully our partners are able to accept. I'm sure some will be by that time. And we look forward to receiving your savings and saving them safely and securely in our bank. And I'm sure you'll be happy to know that CDIC is providing their usual deposit insurance on this. So that's an exciting one for us. And as I said in my quarterly, we have opportunities now and then to provide U.S. dollar loans. And there's nothing like having U.S. dollar deposits as a natural economic hedge. The other thing CDIC has said to do in their press release and on their website is ensure longer-term deposits. And this is really good news for us, too, in that up until April 30th, it's always been five-year GICs, five-year deposits. And we often have opportunities to make much longer-term loans. In fact, some quite lucrative ones, particularly, say, in the hot water heater industry, they're usually leased out for 10 years. And we have a bit of a struggle without using derivatives going out 10 years. We don't particularly like derivatives. So now there's the opportunity to raise longer-term deposits and match longer-term assets that have usually a little better yields on them. Getting on to the prepaid cards and secured cards, I've talked about that. We have a partner we've lined up. We are approved in principle with MasterCard, and our guys are working feverishly on bringing that product to market through one of our partners. So hopefully next quarter or soon after, we'll have some good news that we have a card out there for good Canadians looking to deal through our partners. We are on the hunt for suitable acquisitions. There's quite a few we've had a look at. We've got plenty of capital to buy complementary corporations or other financial institutions that would fit our model. Up until now, they've been priced a little high. That's sort of the downside of a highly liquid, feverish market is price expectations seem to be way up there. But we're still on the hunt, and hopefully we find some complementary ones that we can tuck into our bank and grow more rapidly than we have been organically. Although the organic side might pick up too with the highlighted one. And DRT Cyber, well, as you folks know that have been listening for a while, we decided to sort of squirrel away our cool software development that we have been working on in some cases for years to enhance our bank, particularly in the area of cybersecurity. As most of you know, we came out with, I think it was the first digital safety deposit box to replace the traditional steel boxes that banks have in the basement. DRT Cyber has that product for our bank and for other banks that wish to use it. Mind you, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of interest here in Canada, But we have provided that technology to our partner in Europe that has been using it to a certain degree. Other areas that we work on for our bank is cybersecurity with respect to penetration testing and surveillance of our systems to ensure that no one's probing, no one's getting in, all those kind of good things we have on the go in DRG Cyber. There's other software projects that we're working on that I'll probably just leave unmentioned for the time being, that we might be able to bring, at least in beta testing, next quarter I'll be able to tell you what we've got there, some that we'll be able to get to market rather rapidly. Again, this is all software that our bank is the first customer, first to use, but I see the applicability of the entire industry and to other corporations and even governments that have the same issues as banks do with respect to keeping their data safe from those prying eyes that seem to be trying to get in and have a look at the very least of people's personal data. So that's on the unshaded project. The one that I highlighted in yellow is the new Direct Connect hack, because this is a sort of a breakthrough for us. This allows us to go directly to the mortgage market. So this is CMHC mortgages, conventional mortgages, and even mortgages that would be considered in the Alt-A category are available to be booked through this app. And as you've seen from the press releases, our usual modus operandi, the same we've used over the years, when we come out with a new product, we hope that we can test it all out with a large player. So we get a really good test of how our system works, and we get some really good feedback as to what it needs to do in order to please our partner. And thank you to the Cortel Group for agreeing to be our beta tester on this project. And there may be another diverse type of partner in this area too that. So we get a good wide spectrum view of how our app works. But the ultimate goal, of course, is for our bank to go directly into the retail deposit, the retail mortgage market. And this is that big chunk of balance sheet capacity that we haven't used up until now that is available for a bank with standard risk weighting to use. CMHCs, as I'm sure the analysts know on the phone, is 0% risk weight, conventional, say 35, and others. So lots and lots of capacity. We've got high hopes for this one. And as we've done in the past, partner with the big guys, like we did with insolvency practice, the big insolvency firms, as we did early on and to create the deposit broker business back in the early 90s when this was unknown in the banking industry. Those have been dialing in for a while. We know we partnered with a large independent brokerage firm or financial planning firm out of Winnipeg. That would be Rice Financial. We worked with them. They were the largest on the prairies at the time, created the software, and then after that provided it to the smaller firms, and then of course, the large bank and brokerage firms to create a deposit broker industry. So this is us doing it again, shining the lamp. The genie's come out, and we're all set to go. So, Paul, I'll turn it over to you for questions.
Thank you. We will now take questions from the telephone lines. If you have a question and you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making your selection. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If at any time you wish to cancel your question, please press the pound sign. So again, please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while the participants register. We thank you for your patience. We have a first question, and it is from Stephen Boland. Please go ahead, sir. Your line is now open.
Thanks. Good morning, guys. First question, you mentioned the U.S. deposit products. What would be the offset in terms of loans? So you obviously don't want to have a currency mismatch. So what kind of loans or what opportunity do you have to do U.S.-denominated loans?
We're looking at U.S. dollar receivables in the e-commerce area, Steve.
So is that some of your – so that would be in the e-commerce segment that is there – like your partners, do they do a lot of those types of loans or is it U.S. – like are they located in the U.S. or Canadian – like Canadian-located loans but in U.S. dollars?
Well, without giving secrets away for our partners, some are located in the United States, some are located in Canada, doing business in the States. There seems to be quite a market, and of course, it would be naturally hedged by the U.S. dollar receivables. But we're not averse to bridging any currency gap with forward contracts.
Okay, that makes sense. And then just the second question, you mentioned in the press release about the growth in the e-commerce segment was new partners as well as more business from existing partners. Could you just maybe go into that a little bit, like how many new partners there are? Is it just, you know, is it one that's come in and provided a lot more volume? Maybe if you just give a little more description, Dave.
Be a handful of new partners and quite small. So generally speaking, our existing partners that are larger would give us a bit more business, and the handful of the new guys gave us a little bit, all added up. With respect to growth in that area going forward, we are talking to some fairly large new partners with you know, the enhanced product, of course, U.S. dollars, and improving some of our services that we have out to our partners. You know, some of them are taking advantage of our daily purchase program. Others aren't. Perhaps more would like that. There's you know, maybe other things we can do for them, i.e. bring on a secured credit card, that sort of thing.
Okay. I think that's it for me.
Well, thanks, Steve.
Thanks.
Thank you. Once again, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad if you have a question. Please press star 1. We have a new question now from Paul Campbell. Please go ahead. Sir, your line is open.
Thanks very much. Good morning. Just have a question, David. Overall on the ROE, everything looks to be going in the right direction, costs under control, NIM's pretty stable at a good level. Obviously, credit quality very good, and asset growth is continuing, but ROE is not really moving into those double-digit levels after tax. Do you have a sense of when that might kick in as a trend?
Well, Paul, there's of course two things that are impacting ROE. One is what Warren Buffett some time ago called the anchor of equity, and the odd thing about filing away core cash earnings, which goes directly into our regulatory capital, it creates a bigger denominator, and it actually depresses ROE, all things being equal. So what has happened is we've accumulated a significant amount of surplus capital over what's required to fund our present book. So if we were to do a kind of a calculation that some banks used to in the past, they call it return on employed capital, then we'd be up there with the other guys. But we have kept back this capital for the opportunities that I had spoken about, perhaps acquisitions, hopefully you can find a complementary ones, and we've kept it back for the other factor that impacts ROE, and that's scale. So you know, what our plan is to sit on that surplus capital and then hopefully find something to buy with it and deploy it into these new asset categories as rapidly as we can, so that you'll see employed capital become capital and scale deliver a lot more top-line earnings. that's the plan. If I didn't have all those opportunities, then I couldn't think of anything new to do, which never happens. But theoretically, you'd crank the dividend up and bring it back down.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Once again, please press star 1 on the telephone keypad if you have a question. Now I have a question from Peter Leacock. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning, David. Actually, my question was essentially covered by your answer to Paul, which was to do with had you given some thought with the excess capital to buy back shares or maybe increase the dividend, given that the stock's trading at quite a discount to book value. But I think you've sort of adequately outlined why you want to preserve that capital for other opportunities.
Yes, Peter, and you're up early in the morning. You calling me from Vancouver?
I'm a little further south today in Mexico.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. Yeah, that's always the sort of issue banks have is you're accumulating surplus capital, and for an odd reason, our stock's trading less than book. I have a little more insight into why that might be now, and that our new IR firm, Lodrock, has completed a perceptual survey of that. So hopefully we can rectify the misconceptions in the marketplace that were outlined in this perceptual survey. But if we didn't have a spot to use the capital, then yes, indeed, a share buyback is, of course, a good idea. It's 75% of book value. Of course you do. But with these new projects, particularly the Direct Connect that gives us access to non-brokered CMHCs, conventionals and the other Alt-A-type mortgages without the usual brokerage commissions, and probably not quite as price-sensitive as those that go through the very heated broker market. It looks to us that that's a good avenue for this capital. Low risk meets our risk appetite and large volumes. From the reception that we received from the hopeful partners, it looks like another one of those products we build. You know, you build it, they will come sort of thing. It's something the market has been waiting for. That's what I'm getting from the people I've spoken to. Hey, it's breath of fresh air. So you can do this mortgage directly with a streamlined app, call center to deal with the paperwork and all that sort of stuff. Provide convenience at the point of sale of a home purchase versus convenience at the point of sale of a motorcycle. Basically, we took our model and we said, okay, let's get to the biggest market there is in retail purchases. Okay, it's not RVs, it's not motorcycles, not hot tubs, it's homes. So we've taken that strategy to the home market, and I expect there'll be those that emulate us, and they probably won't be too long, as usual. But we got first mover advantage again, and we got a big partner. We hopefully have another partner in a different type of home sales area, and we're looking for big things in this product.
Okay, thanks for the explanation, David.
Very welcome, Peter, and good luck in the south there. Make sure you get your sunscreen on. You guys coming from Vancouver down places without cloud cover at a bit of risk.
You're right about that. It's been a gray, wet winter on the west coast.
Yes, I missed you last time. It was indeed.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered at this time. I will return the meeting back to Mr. Taylor.
Well, thank you, everybody, for dialing in. These are exciting times for VersaBank, of course. It was quite a few years to create the digital bank that you see today, and it took quite a few years for the marketplace really to evolve to the point that a digital bank like ours can take advantage of new consumer sentiments and desire for speed and convenience. We're all set to go, and of these new markets, new channels I've spoken about, keep us at VersaBank keen and excited, and hopefully next quarter we can talk about all the progress we've made on those fronts. So thank you again for joining in. Signing off for the Winter Wonderland in London, Ontario.
Thank you. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and we thank you for your participation.